Hello and welcome everyone to the Decibel Boost Podcast, and it is indeed that time of year again, the end of the year, the grand Decibel Boost year-end album countdown spectacular thing something trademark. We're still working out the kinks after like almost a decade? Jesus Christ, it's almost been a decade of this. Anyway, I am your host Robert, and I need some kind of topical segue here. John Hamm turned the lights off .mp4 TikTok edit. Please laugh. And with me, I have.
May this year end the way it began, with furious anger and urge to burn it all down. But positively this time.
And.
On the next amazing digital circus, Kang gets pissed off by two guys from this one podcast, and for some reason, those fish return.
Dude, no! That was my life savings, dude! Seriously, how many times am I gonna be watching shows and they get jump-scared by Zach Hadel going bankrupt? What's next? Is he gonna show up in fucking, I don't know, Suction Cup Man or something? Is he gonna be a Lackadaisy? He just becomes like the Glitch Productions broke dude.
He appeared on a VZPop show. He appeared on a show from Glitch. The Indie Animation Circle. I don't know what that it happened, but he must collab with the other guy named Michael.
We shall see. And now that I think about it, for that matter, he couldn't afford to go broke in Smiling Friends because he was still paying off that painting. It has been a while since we've gathered together because, just things. I had a lot of vacations I was going on, which honestly felt pretty nice. But now we are back in the saddle for one last round, where we talk about the albums that we thought were the best, the coolest, things we think you should check out. Because you can trust our taste. We do the hard work so you don't have to. Although, you should probably still do the work anyway. Because seriously, music is sometimes the only thing that keeps me going sane when the world is falling apart in like 27 different ways. Wait. Make that 48 different ways. We just invented 20 new ways already. But yeah, that was definitely one of those years where like music was the main thing, like keeping me from just screaming into the void. I was still screaming into the void anyway, but that's enough shtick and rambling. So time to actually start counting things down, you know, for those of us that actually have lists. Sometimes we'll probably just talk about things in unnumbered fashions, maybe. So as always, we throw things over to Mr. Alex to get the ball rolling.
Okay. Also, Merry Christmas and all that shit, whatever. Doesn't matter right now. That's my appealing for this year from hell. Just a long, exasperated, everything's bad. Everything's very bad. Everything is terrible. Everything sucks. Everything is shit. Everything is painful. Everything is terrible. Everything is horrible. But the music wasn't. So, you know, take the wins wherever you can get them. So, remember last year where I did a very genre-specific organizational list where I decided, you know what? I can't number things anymore. I can't pinpoint everything out, you know, in a numerical order anymore. I'm doing that again because turns out I'm very selective with my tastes, and at this point, this after this many, however many years it's been, I'm just gonna go, you know what, fuck it, I don't care anymore. I'm gonna listen to what I want to listen to, and if that doesn't line up with other quote-unquote reviewers or critics or my sprite ball that just fell down. Oh, and you know what? Fuck it. Whatever. Who cares? Doesn't matter anymore. I'm a grumpy old man now. And I'm going to be even grumpier in a couple days when I officially add a number to my age, which Everything's terrible. Especially now that I might actually have sleep apnea, so that's gonna be fun to deal with.
Yikes.
Yeah, it has not been fun for me for the last couple of weeks, but that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, I'm just gonna do a really lazy thing and give you a top 10 list with a bunch of other stuff, because I'm me. And this is just how I do things around here. No rhyme, no reason, no logic, no sense, no nothing. But that's how my brain works. It's hyper-fixated on little things, like all the bubbles in this Sprite ball I'm opening. I gotta take a sip. So, no notes, no script, no nothing. I'm just gonna go by what I remember, which is surprisingly a lot. Before I get to the top 10, I'm just gonna lump all this in here as well. I have a rule for my list. No EPs, no soundtracks, because that will just clutter everything up. I'm still doing that, at least. But I will section off some soundtracks, because there were some good soundtracks for movies and other things throughout the year. Sinners by Ludwig Göransson, that was fantastic. Chainsaw Man Reze Arc, Kensei Ushio, is just a god among men. K-pop Demon Hunters, yes, I'm going to be that guy. There are good songs on there. There are good songs on there. Just don't avoid it. Spinal Tap 2. The movie went up on HBO Max the same weekend that Rob Reiner was killed. So that's a terrible coincidence. Yeah. But you know what? Damn good movie. Cannot wait to see Spinal Tap at Stonehenge next year. And, yeah, the soundtrack, very good. Where else are you going to find Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood singing Big Bottom? Nowhere, that's where. Yeah. And, because, well, this one isn't a movie, but it's still a fantastic soundtrack. Mario Kart World.
Ah, yeah, that did happen.
The fact that it cannot be physically put onto, you know, CD, because there are just so many songs in the soundtrack, that's good enough reason for me to put it on here in this section, because that is some very, very good music. I've also spent the last couple weeks watching a whole lot of Mike and Snare videos, especially the deep Discog dives, and good stuff. Okay, now for the honorable mentions. I can't talk anymore. Basically the albums that I couldn't really fit into a top 10, or came out a little too late, or what have you. So I'll just lay them out here. The Weeknd, Hurry Up Tomorrow. Good album, butchered by a very bad rollout execution. Mm-hmm. It could have been something even greater, but alas, too much stuff got in the way. Kind of a mess, and I still have not seen that movie. I don't know if I'm ever going to see it. Lady Gaga, Mayhem. Good album, not my favorite from Lady Gaga. So just a little too much Andrew Watt for my liking. Sabrina Carpenter, Man's Best Friend. I didn't listen to it, but I have tremendous respect for her for being able to say, hey, fuck you guys! If only other people could do the same.
Remember, kids, do not underestimate the power of the words, fuck you make me.
Yes. Also, I will appreciate the unintentional reference to the greatest Spinal Tap album, Smell the Glove, on that album cover. It's true what they say. What's wrong with being sexy? Fantastic movie. Okay. West Side Gun. Heels Have Eyes. This EP mixtape project thing. There are three of them by now, and they're very good. Fuck the Fed, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bunch of cretins over there. Ghost. Skeleta. It's a dumb, goofy album, but I still enjoyed it. Not quite top 10 level, but, you know, It's a fun, stupid, silly, dumb hair metal album. I can enjoy it sometimes. And lastly, because it came out literally a week before we recorded this, Health Conflict DLC. I said this is the music that plays when Third Impact happens and we all turn into LCL. It's abrasive, it's scary, it's in your face, but it's just, it hits just right. Especially after this godforsaken year from hell. Ugh. Only reason why it's not in the top 10 is because it came out literally a week ago. So, yeah, I didn't have enough time to take it all in. Okay, now for the top 10 list proper, and you're going to find out that there is absolutely no rhyme or reason or flow or cohesion for any of this, but you know what? It's my list, and this is just how I felt. So, at number 10, Skrillex. Fuck you, Skrillex, you think you're Andy Warhol, but you're not. Heart emoji. I enjoy going back to the old, you know, 2010, 2011 EPs that Skrillex did. I really enjoyed that. And then Recess happened, and it just killed the genre for a long time. But this was a fun return to past form. Basically done in a way that says, you know what? Screw all this record industry bullshit. I just want to have some dumb fun. It's a dumb fun kind of album, and I can enjoy that tremendously. There was also an EP that came out a little while ago that sort of adds more to it. I forget the name, but that's also very good. All right, number 9. Bit of an odd place for this guy, but I'll explain in a moment. Stephen Wilson, The Overview. Once again, the weird pattern I have with Stephen Wilson's solo albums struck again. It's been a very off-on-off-on-off-on in the last couple years. There was To the Bone, the more, you know, pop-centric album, which I really didn't like. Then there was Hurry Up Some... I'm reading my notes wrong. Ugh. Then there was The Future Bites, which I think and still think is his best solo album. Then came The Harmony Codex, which I felt was a good middle ground between all the styles. Then there's The Overview, which is a two-track piece of two 20-minute long pieces each. It's very space rock in a way. I enjoyed it, but I'm not at that level where I can say a whole lot about it. It always takes me a long time to internalize albums, even from people who I really like. So this is sort of in that middle-of-the-road section for me. I don't think it's, like, top level, but it's not bottom level either. It's not even close to, like, you know, To the Bone or some of the weaker cuts of Mr. Gentis. You know, it's still good. Still good. Number 8. Nina Jirachi, I Love My Computer. It's just goofy, Y2K-centric electropop. I don't know what else to say. There's a song on the album called iPod Touch. This album speaks to me in a very personal way, and I really enjoy it.
The iPod Touch. It was a simpler time.
Yeah, before everything was microtransaction to hell and back. It used to be you could just pay $1 for a full game. And you get the full game.
Ugh.
We must go back. Alright, number 7. Maybe a controversial pick, but, you know, whatever. Sleep Token. Even in Arcadia. I will concede not as good as Take Me Back to Eden. But it's not outright terrible, like some other folks are saying. Oh, God, where did that come from?
Discourse.
There are some quality cuts on this album. And again, you have to remember, I come from a late 90s, early 2000s pop and R&B background. That was music I listened to growing up, so that's sort of ingrained into my brain. It's in here, through all the, you know, post-metalisms that Vessel and Two put in on this album. And I can admire that. It's a weird blending of genres. But I like weird blending of genres if you haven't figured it out after 400-something shows that we've done. Ugh, whatever. Well, speaking of genre blending, sort of dipping into an alternative genre, number 6, Tyler, the Creator, Don't Tap the Glass. Just give me, like, late 90s, early 2000s style hip-hop beats, and that very quick, smooth, swift, cohesive, trackless flow, and I'll be happy with whatever you got. This is a fun album. The fine accompaniment to Chromacopia. We need more surprise drops like this. Not everything has to be a gigantic event, or whatever the hell Drake calls quinceañeras that he goes to. But that's neither here nor there.
Oh, Lord.
Had to get one more in. Yeah, good album, fun album. As you can tell, my analysis is very in-depth. Number 5. Now we're into familiar territory. Between the Buried and Me, The Blue Nowhere. The feelings I've had about this band for specific reasons for the past couple years have been very conflicting. At this point, what's done is done. The parties have separated, so now I think I can put these guys back into a gray area where I can listen to them without feeling guilty, which I'm good. Going forward as a 4-piece, maybe there was some trepidation afoot. Then this album dropped, and all of that trepidation just poofed away. Even more genre blending here, because you have the prog metalness, you have sort of their past metalcore-ism sprinkled throughout. There's even a bit of a hoedown and or hootenanny sprinkled in here as well. I'll leave it up to all of you to figure out which is which. Might be a hot take. Strongest album since Coma Ecliptic. Like I said a while back, I listened to Colors 2 for the first time in a while recently. I still think it's good, but I've sort of softened my stance on it. It was the right album at the time, but I think this is going to stand out a lot more going forward. Okay, what do we have next? Even more familiar territory. Number 4. Spirit Box. Tsunami Sea.
Nice.
Do I have to say anything about Spirit Box at this point? Because I don't think I don't think there's anything else to say. This band is very, 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 very good at what they do. And what they do is everything core, I guess you can say. There's weird influences in here. There's sort of laid-back D&B-type grooves sprinkled in here. But those chugs, those riffs, those screams, those growls, those everythings. It's a good time. God bless this band. They know how to hit the right spot every time. Right in the throat. Because they hit hard, you see, and they'll leave you gasping for air. That's the joke. You suck, McBain. There's my brain acting crazy again. Okay.
Laugh.
Yes. Yeah. Laugh, damn you. And then laugh. And then stop laughing because it's not funny. Anyway. Number 3. Also my favorite rap album of the year. Clips. Let God Sort 'Em Out. Mm-hmm. Between the fiery bars, the lush, pristine production, and just everything coalescing into a scrumptiously vindictive package that knows what its targets are aimed at. Worth the wait. Well worth the wait. Yeah, it was very nice seeing Clips and Jolich and seeing the Burgeon thing at the Vatican. That was fun. It's a very good album. Hope it cleans the house at the Grammys. But, you know, not too much because we got Kendrick to get some awards too. I still can't make up my mind. All right, number two. This one might surprise all of you, but at number two, Dream Theater, Parasomnia.
Wow.
Only this will make sense two. What number one is, but yeah, for this album, I did take a lot of time internalizing it. I studied the motifs, I studied the themes, I studied the structure, I studied just about everything on here. This is a very strong album. I'm glad Mike Portnoy is back. He brings that extra level of hard-hitting groove I was missing with Mike Mangini behind the kits. Which makes you wonder, what's going on with this Monolith band of his? Are they going to put out an album or not? Whatever, I'll deal with that another time. Anyway, this album, fantastic. I was thinking about seeing them live because they came to Charlotte. For whatever reason, I decided not to. Maybe it was just my social anxiety working up that night. But you know what? Take the victory lap. Y'all had a fantastic tour, a fantastic album. You got a Grammy nomination. And yeah, I'm going to go back to this a couple more times because it's just a really good structured album. But I do wish the bass was turned up a little bit more in the mix, but that's a topic for another time. Now, you might be wondering, if that's number two, what's number one? Friends, have you ever wondered what it's like to be isekai'd into a pachinko machine in the heart of Tokyo?
Oh, I think I know where this one's going.
Number one. They did it again. Moron Police. Pachinko.
Hey!
What an astounding miracle of an album this is. Like, not just for all the circumstances leading up to its production and its inevitable release. It took quite a bit of time, but everything about this album is just fun. This is a fun album that's centered around a very goofy concept about being isekai'd into a penny machine in Tokyo, and you're going to be just being moved all across Japan as you are taken out of that penny machine, wandering just the countryside, the cityscapes. This band knows how to get their weep shit going, and I really, really, really admire that about these guys. It does have more melodic flavors and themes from A Boat on the Sea brought back into here, which I really admire. But this goes a little bit further than A Boat on the Sea. Yes, there is saxophone in here. It's still in here. It has great motifs and themes. And also, in Pachinko Part 2, there is a guest that I wouldn't have never expected to hear on one of their albums. 8-string guitars.
Hey!
Yeah, that low riff. Was not expecting to hear that. That is a fun addition. I enjoyed that. This band keeps me on my toes. And the way the album closes, they had to know what they were doing. They left me wanting more. God bless you, fellas. Oh, and by the way, I did actually buy the album. I've been doing this whole not doing any music streaming for a month because, again, Mike the Snare, YouTube videos, blah, blah, blah. I got my iPod that I, refurbed in working order. I got a whole bunch of crap on there. I'm listening to it from that. And, yeah. I enjoy that experience. What an astounding album. I will buy it on vinyl when it inevitably goes up for a sale or through a Kickstarter or whatever. But yeah, it's good. Listen to it. It's fantastic. It's more than fantastic. It's superb.
And how. Alright, that was a solid choice of a list of records. And now that that part of the list is out of the way, we shall head on to part two, which as always, is the hybrid one.
Yes, now I come to my part, and how about 2025? Well, I was screaming the void, but I don't feel like fucking my voice up, because I was because I'm really dealing, because I was sick the last couple of days, but I'm getting good now, but I'm getting better now. But boy, this year was ass, especially my considering a bunch of personal shit that I've said before here and there that either had me depressed or just, everything, but yeah. Of course, there's a lot of things that kept me up. And one of those is music. Well, there's music, there's anime, VTubers, any animation, all that stuff. But anyway, this is my music. And of course, there's all the discussion of people saying, hip hop is dead because don't believe what the people say. Hip-hop still had a good year, just that you don't just depend on the mainstream shit to do it. You know that. Happy who listen to music, who view music, actually I think they know better than the streamers do, because they actually do the work.
Yeah, plus who the fuck knows what's even going on with, like, the chart metrics these days? Especially since they just announced some new fucking changes and shit.
Yeah, all that bullshit, especially when, this is why you don't depend on Billboard, just on music takes, just know that, but, yeah, I have 25 albums, which, of course, I always do, at least right now, and, yeah, there's gonna be, let's just say, one type of genre music has kind of dominated my list, but have you know that for the past decade of doing this shit, and yes, we've been doing this shit for a decade, into next year, it's like, oh, hell. There's a ton of Shadows Field when he was doing this for a long time, or Fantano, even Spectrum Pulse. Anyway, let's get it on. Number 25. Blood Orange, FX Honey. Now, I would call this a pop album, except it's an album that, again, I don't describe as just one genre. Like, it's basically a lot of things. It's R&B, soul, alternative, indie, UK R&B, all that type of shit. It's basically like different styles that blend that, you know, that's basically got something going on, which, okay, like, given how his music, given how, like, you know, how Blood Orange, aka Dev Hines, you know, do a lot of movie scores and stuff, like, okay, there's some good gems here too. Like, there's some stuff I like here, for whether it be the single song Between, which I done for a lot of times. Life, like that shit, and the train King's Cross, which I also thought, I'm kind of digging this shit. Like, it's very fuck with, because like, okay, I can like it's something that watch it through a lot. It's still a record I do recommend, so there's that. Number 24. Gangsta Doodles, Gangsta Music Volume 3. Again, we think of the term gangsta music, but I think it's just one thing. But no. It's more something that's more groovy, vibrant, eccentric, extravagant, and obscure. Believe me, obscure is the word you're looking for, because the people in here, you're like, who are these motherfuckers? But that's a good thing. You might just get what you like. Because, like, David, there's good shit on here. Like, you got the song Marigold from Chuck Strangers. You got one song called Big Damone. You got one song called High Speed Clouds, which I can't recall the artist's name, but I'm sorry for that. But look, these are the sounds you will drive. You listen at late at night in old school Cadillac, or lowrider, or hoopty. Yes, hoopty. Number 23, Yukimi, For You. And another one, who the singer from Little Dragon, just so you get recognized. But yeah, you know how much I talk about this band and the singer a lot. And I think it's also a soul album. Nice. And what do you know? I liked it. I mean, it's basically what I said with Yukimi at this point. I like her voice. I like her singing. It's very chill, very laid back. I like the vibe she's losing the music. And I thought, okay. She wrote a soul album with a vibe. Oh, this is nice. This is nice. This is very dreamy. I really like this shit. So yeah, so yeah, there you go, Yukimi. For you. Number 22. Hold up. Excuse me while I put on my mirror shades. Clipping Dead Channel Sky. Yeah, I'm gonna say this is the hardest review I've written for album this year, and this will be it. Because, you know, trying to go, you know, going from horrorcore to cyberpunk, which, I mean, cyberpunk is pretty much very well known if you, well, even on a surface level, you know, like, oh yeah, there's that. I mean, that, like, yeah, like, I will say, even though it's not my favorite album of theirs, it's not sloppy. Like, I did dig some tracks here. Like, of course, like singles like Change the Channel, Run It, Dodger, and since the Dead Town Sky Plus came out, there's now both parts of Mirror Shades, which, oddly enough, you can find on YouTube blended as one song, which I think somebody's seen this edit, which you might check out just to get into it a little bit. But yeah, definitely this album, and I thought, Clippin' still continue to make excellent music, and this is a solid ass album. 21. Toki Monster, Internal Reverie. Yeah, that album out this year, in case you forgot. And the last one was in 2020, which, damn, that was 5 years ago.
Jesus Christ. So,
yeah. I remember, this basically, the very music is very, very much in the fringe of both hip hop and electronic going to music. And I thought, okay, this is some groovy shit. Like, one of your songs in there is Corazon / Death by Disco Part 2, which that was a very groovy ass song, which I thought, okay, I played a lot of times, which apparently, according to my YouTube music, thingy that I played that song a lot of times. Not number one song though, but I played a lot of times. But yeah, this is some good shit. I will say that a lot. Number 20. Bruiserwolf. But which Bruiserwolf album?
Oh yeah, he did have two things out.
Yeah. Well, I mean Potluck was dope, but I'ma go with Made by Dope. Uh-huh. Harry Fraud. Yeah. I'm thinking this one with more because I like, I like Bruce Wolf and I like Harry Fraud as well, because I think, you see a lot more of him later on. But yeah, and knowing me, I did a lot of production, another white hip hop producer, just like, wow, I hate it. Of course, is it dope? Yes. Is it made by dope? Yes. Is it got me dope voice like Raised by Dope? And my favorites being Heartbroke and Connect Four Currency, which one or two tracks featuring those guys that I like. Yeah. So yeah, I gotta say is this dope? Number 19. Speaking of somebody from the Bruiser Brigade. Yeah, Danny Brown, Stardust. One of Danny Brown's music, like going back to his stuff, like Tragic Exhibition and even his guest appearance on Hot Ones, see how far he come to, you know, getting clean and sober, and still he makes records as dope as Dip, proofing that he may go sober, but the quality did not go down. In fact, it's just dynamic, in my opinion, as Scandal is why you want, like, collaborate with a bunch of hyper pop artists, which create this weird, unique, distinct sound. Which I can fuck with. Which yeah, I can definitely fuck with this. Like I'll say this: at first, I thought it's all right, but again, more listens to it means that I see it now. Especially love tracks like Lift You Up, Green Light, and The End, which. Of course, got the strong bass thing going on, which I kind of fuck with. But yeah, maybe. But yeah, props to Danny Brown. Keep on doing his thing. Number 18. Y'all got some crackers? Wait, no. Here's some goldfish. Oh, yeah. There it is. Hit-Boy the Alchemist. Goldfish.
Nah.
Yeah, so, ring-a-ding-ding. Alchemist on this list. Take a shot.
I got Red Bull here. Does that count?
Yeah, sure. As always, you expect him to be on this list, but yeah, him and Hit-Boy collaborate again for an album, which, you know, got the best roles from them, like both in rapping and producing. Was at least some cuts that I generally like Ricky, which I thought that's my favorite joints from there, and I thought Hit-Boy's production was so fire, and Alchemist and their verses was very excellent. Especially the other track, Not Much, which I definitely fuck with. That was Alchemist's producer, and I thought he did well himself with him and Boy James collaborating in there too. Stay tuned for him. I just going back in them, and I've done some Hit-Boy with here too. Like, again, these dudes playing the best ones, both of them, and I thought, yeah, they're done again. It's some good shit. Number 17. And this is why I say hip-hop had a great year. Look into the underground sometimes. Look at some shit that you find underneath just look for shit. That is Knowledge to Pirate at Rock Marciano, The Round Table. Yeah, my Knowledge to Pirate is very low because most time I know him for is Clever with Marciano, and it's that raw, soulful, and gritty hip hop that came from rappers like this. Like, the reason I look like, there's a reason why I looked at hip hop records from a lot of underground rappers this year, because to see if I like this or not, if it's me or not. And these are the one records that stuck with me. Like, most of them didn't stick, but this one definitely did. Like, I like Now It's Just Balls in here, and Rock on Beats is very stellar. I definitely turn the tracks like The Danger, Magic and Kareem, and Receipts. Like, again, even if I was second this year, again, go below the surface level. Try and go deep, deep, deep down into what you discover, and you'll find some great gems. Trust me. Number 16. J.I.D. God Does Like Ugly. And hey, for the first time on this list, somebody from Dreamville is actually here. It's the one guy we actually like. Yeah, J.I.D. brought the bars in this album. I feel like I like this more than the Forever Story because I feel like this hit harder than the first than that one. Like, of course, you know, the one on the Community, which of course you mentioned, I put a fucking bullet in about the fucking builder, which we all like that line. That was funny. But of course, I like this one laugh from You Ugly, which I quote here, live from the depths of hell with Angel Weeks that yet to flail, yet fans argue about record sales like they recognize themselves. That line stuck with me all throughout this year because that's very true within some spaces, especially those on TikTok doing that shit. That just hit. But yeah. This album is great. He has bars for days. And you know this. Number 15. Oh, who broke the fucking glass? All over the floor and shit.
Come on, you people were told not to touch that.
I ain't sweeping nothing in. That's why I'm gonna put on shoes. That's right. Tyler Crater, don't tap the glass. Yeah, as Alex said, it's not a different album from Tyler. Like, you know, it's basically like, you know, basically, what you say, music to dance to. To get woo to. Get freaky deaky to. Yes, I said freaky deaky. You heard sugar in my tongue. You know what you're getting into. It's a good, fun album. And after doing some heavy shit, it's like, okay, get the cool shit down, get some good shit, which this is some good shit. Oh, and one more thing, even though in the Grammys, we all count for Eclipse of Kitchen to the Wind, I want Tyler to take that Alternative Music Award. Why? Because I want to say it's because if it does win, I want to see how many people will act racist towards that shit. I want to see who's going to say, How's that alternative music? It's alternative. It can pass genres, right? Alternative can be hip hop too, you know. Number 14, and you might be surprised at this one because I got it so low from because it's got usually on high. That is The Weeknd with Hurry Up Tomorrow. Yeah, after being wild by Don FM, which I still love, like, it's a good album. It's like the entry, it's just like, yeah, you got some flaws, like, the bloated runtime, Timeless sucked, and it still is, shut up. And of course, somebody who has seen the movie, it won't help with anything. Like, I just understand, like, it won't help with nothing. So, but still, it got some moments that I do well from the album. Like, I still love songs like Wake Me Up, Cry For Me, Baptized in Fear, I Can't Wait to Get There, Big Sleep, which I keep getting that's a music video that's written by Gaspar that guy. If you know your art house film movie directors, which, okay, why can't you get some? Why can't you smell like the... I was going to mention why can't you smell like the Do Your Movie, but that might be worse. I don't know. Maybe just stick to music videos. But I just say this. It's a good album. I still like it. Weeknd, take some acting classes again. Go to the Sati Brothers. Maybe Benny for acting. I mean, directing may not be Benny's strong suit. Hers. Her mixing about this hash machine, or I don't know, just love him, or I don't know, like love him watching. I don't know the Mario, also Mario 2, where he playing Bowser Jr. Yes, that's a thing. We a good album, just not all agree. Number 13, Earl Sweatshirt, Live, Laugh, Love. Yeah, saying the title of that made me think it's the same guy who did an album called I don't like shit, I don't go outside. Damn. Again, the album is 10 years old at this point. Yeah, imagine going back to Our Future, you thinking Earl, you thinking this the same Earl from that Our Future. Because it's like, that's one of the most well-known names of underground hip-hop. Or at least different hip hop. But yeah, like take some rap songs, but not as depressing. In fact, talk about basically a lot of things like, you know, like being a father, enjoying the good things in life despite being in hell, which is what we're living right now. But yeah, it's very solid. Really like it. Also, so I'm gonna check out our Tomaline. Number 12. If you're one of those persons that say you're too mature for rap, slap them. Don't ever say you're too mature rap because this is the shit that's actually mature. Like this record, Evidence, Unlearning, Volume 2. I said before that, well, I'm 35, and the fact that this is the type of hip hop I can easily get into. Or to be fair, I can't be into something before I was this age, but. Yeah, I like my mom a few years back. I like this one now. Like, you got this chill and laid back vibe to the songs and very therapeutic. I don't want to be all, you kiss this to this shit and not that gangsta bullshit. I'm not going to do that shit. I just never, I am not that fucking old yet. But I know what I like, know what I fuck with, and I fuck with this. And now that Rob mentioned it on the album roundup during that month. Yeah, I wonder when Agnes and Evans are going to be nice Step Brothers. It's been a while.
Step Brothers too.
I mean, it can happen. I mean, he brought Gangling back a few years back. He could bring back Step Brothers. Number 11. This is a soundtrack pick. I'm kind of cheating because it's a soundtrack pick that's actually three discs with three different artists. And from something that I got a very strong opinion on, that is Kamasi Washington, Floating Points, and Bonobo. Lazarus.
I was wondering if that was going to come up at some point.
Yeah, so as you may know about, you know, y'all some of y'all remember Real Lazarus. You know how I feel about that shit. And yes, I know some people are, you know, it's very mixed. Like, if I'm disappointing, okay, fine. I mean, I'm not going to call it the worst. I'm not going to say the bullshit like that. But, okay, but we can all agree one thing. The music is fucking fire. Like, you got Mr. Wars of Kamasi Washington bringing his making his chance to play me here. Like, if a floating point's winning, they're also Jesse, but more electronic feel, and Bonobo actually has this more ambient worldly feel. Like, hearing the tracks, like, from like rippling, the trailer music, the using it, like, first time I heard that shit, it's like, oh, I gotta check this soundtrack out. And tracks like Beyond the Sky was fucking amazing. Sageness, which was used in episode 7, the one that did, you know, episode 7, like, man, that's just something good. This sound amazing. Like, I just fell in love with it. I just love this. And there's also Wires, which is, oddly enough, a Flying Post song that was from another album of theirs, went to another album of theirs, which is basically the Lazarus version, which they said right here. But I gotta say, these three brought out the best they got in this anime and this soundtrack. And yes, even though Evil Mark was about to come and tell you motherfuckers stuff, I'm not gonna do that. I'll do that for the anime list coming up soon. Alright, now we're down to the top 10. Alright, next up, number 10. Currency and Harry Fraud Never Catch Us. Wow, the second time in the list I put Currency and Harry Fraud on the air, and yeah, I fuck with it. Like, there's not much explaining about it. It's like, it's laid back and squishy, it sounds rich and decadent, and why does it sound like it's a fucking dessert? Okay, anyway, go back to my YouTube music rewind. My most played song was from this album, a song called Zach Morris Phone that features Boozer Wolf. Yes. In the year 2025, I listened to two songs that feature Currency, Harry Fraud, and Boozer Wolf. Doofenshmirtz. Yeah, and the first album, I do fuck with it. Like, you got singles like Dream Machines, Airport Industries, which, with him and Wiz Khalifa, which, again, well, I like Wiz Khalifa when he's more laid back and not, maybe Wiz Khalifa's just more palatable when he's not doing soundtrack pieces. Or, yeah, I don't know if he's doing it anymore, but anyway. Number 9. I bet you expected this. Bodie James, Nicholas Craven, Late My Own Funeral. Yeah, he's forgotten the year of Bodie James releasing after album, after month. Like, and wow, he's about to be laughing, but no, like, I put this one up here first, but yeah. It was a boy overload this year, and like that's a full movie. And to be fair, like nothing that is overload or anything. They're very short albums, which that's fine. I'd rather you load with short albums than do long bullshit ones. But anyway. Here's this Craven back, and he only made two albums this year. I went with this one because it's gonna stuck with me the most. Like I know that another one out that came out a month back, but I kind of forgot about it. But anyway, this album, I kind of forgot a lot. Like, got songs I like from Spiderweb and Web Shields to Antonio Total and Neil Prepper, which I thought, okay, these are fire songs. And this album is short and sweet, which like that too. So, look at you there. Number 8. Again, this is kind of cheating because it's kind of a duology album because it's labeled this one, this two. Jay Worthy, Once Upon a Time. Which, yeah, like, reason, again, like, this, like, the last time I did this is when West Side Gunn did his, Hermes H series, which is split the two, which, sort of like this, but, sort of like this in a way, it's like, you got him and a bunch of these rappers, or it's people coming from the West Coast bringing that flavor in here, bringing the flavor in the pot. Oh, okay, like, again, like, this kind of fire, like, you brought West Coast flavor here, you brought some, you got some good shit here. You got tracks like, one track called Blade Runner with Rob Marciano. You got, one track like The Outcome with, at least by The Outcome, West Side Gunn, Dave East and Ab Soul with, I thought was fire. Famous Players, which features iDress. Anybody remember iDress? Yeah, they feature a song every time. Okay, okay, that's kind of fire. And according to the song called Angel Dust with Thundercat, and P fucking Telefetti, it's a song with George Quinn, which of course is gonna get funky and shit. But yeah, I was definitely digging the hell out of these albums, and I thought, okay, gonna do Jay Worthy. But okay, he makes a good shit, and I can't remember that. Oh yeah, he's part of Griselda, and I can't remember. Oh yeah, he's the guy who's stepbrother to that one guy's ex we won't name. Number 7. Didn't remember what was 10 years ago. Gonna Delete was 10 years ago.
Oh god, right, that was in my college years.
Yeah, 1.6 never Tranquilizer. Yeah, again, like, this made me think, yeah, this album this made me reminisce the time I actually do, I did listen to 1.6 Never in this music. Then I realized that I probably have listened to this music for a long time, considering, oh, that's right. I was right, he did that thing with Forum Lapitan from the Adult Sales Singles Program, man, I gotta pour it out again. And this reminded me why I liked this stuff in the first place, like the sound tranquil, relaxing. One way it feels breezy, and then sometimes you get cussed that strikes. But I thought, okay, you are definitely doing the shit. All right, this is some good shit. Yeah, now, well, I guess we see let's look for the best of you in the future. And by that, I mean, let's see if you get any, you know, recognition, any, you know, something about me, you know, something about you scored, with Morty Supreme, since you scored that movie. Number 6. This album that kind of started the whole Bodhi album rollout, or at least a lot. Got me saying the first words when I say, "Rob, you motherfucker," because she brought this to me. Bodhi James and Chuck Strangers, Token of Appreciation. Yeah, that's my favorite one out of the, I forgot how many projects he released, 8 or 9. I just wrote a number, but this one would be my top favorite. Maybe it could be the favorite the Chuck Strangers music, and I thought, okay, it's production that kind of got me into more, and I thought, okay. I will say, like, yeah, the flaw is like, well, he made a lot of, he made a lot of projects here, and I thought, okay, this one just right. Songs are dope, Boys Are Everywhere, Dungeon's Fire, and of course, like, yeah, I get to know more about Chuck Strangers as a producer and rapper. Well, more producer here than rapper there, but it's not that bad, but yeah, it's a good project from Bodhi. He keep doing good shit. If you're gonna do this again, oh my god, I'm not gonna do this again. He probably won't, but he might. I don't know. Next year gonna be 10 Bodhi James projects coming out. Now we got the top 5. Speaking of number 5. Another underground record that I mean that I fuck with. Jimmy D and Nicholas Craven, Good Music Hypnotizes. Yeah, this is pretty much it between me when I say that this is that hard hit, this is the hard hip hop stuff with the drumless loops, the soul samples, the chipmunk soul with the jazzy undertones, and of course the soulful boom bap flair. This is something that I actually bump into a lot when I play this. Like Jimmy D and Nicholas Craven again, another person who's been on my list a lot. Like I'm not shocked that this is very underground because you know it's underground. If you want hip hop that's outside the mainstream, then yeah, there's this shit. We got it. Number four, Mobb Deep, Infinite. This year, Mass Appeal's been doing a thing with the Legend has a series, which it hits and misses, but they've been doing well, trying to get those classic hip hop rappers. Spotlight and I think Mobb Deep, no matter how fast, like it didn't try to play trends, it didn't try to do words that didn't feel right, it's sticking to their guns, and that's good. We know Mobb Deep for that street shit, and yeah, it changes up for a bit because well Havoc's older and Prodigy's gone, and it shows that it's indeed the last Mobb Deep album we're gonna get, well, with a bang. And again, it shows how to handle a post-mobbish release with respect, love, and deserves. This is how you handle shit like this. It's like, if you do something for you want to do or care. It's like if let's say, something happened to Robert Alex, which I hope does not. If I do a post-mobbish for dinner, it's like, let's put some turnstile on there. Robert choked me from the grave. If I did that shit.
From the grave. I'll do it right now. Come over here.
Yeah. This is how you do a record. This is one example of how you do a post-office record. Which Love Deserves. Again, one of them. Number three, and you kind of expected this at this point. Because you figure, well, of course we're going to put this out. Number three, Freddie Gibbs and the Alchemist, Alfredo 2. I'm like, well, it's number three in 2020, and now it's number three in 2025. Of course he brought another extra album with the collaborator, and now going from a time off, you also to Japanese Yakuza. Because, like, you went from Alfredo to Robin on the last episode, and another has more of an Eastern influence to it. Like, of course, there's like some tracks that Freddie does add. There's Freddie doing this at being the Butcher and Jim Jones, which that's expected, of course. And of course, got some tracks like 995, which I like. S-Pack, which that's amazing. Shangri-La, which I'm beginning to like a lot more and more, maybe because of the beat more, or the music video, which is basically Alfredo Uncut, aka, the old BET Uncut on day, was like, okay, they're going that way, which, good, but okay. But it's good to see him again. Number two, this might be a surprise to you, because this album came out last month, and I figured, yeah, I gotta review this. I gotta talk about it, even though I was on vacation. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna put this on my own site. So, number two, De La Soul, Cabin in the Sky. This was almost my number one pick. Like, I was fighting this in another record here, but yeah, like, this is. Again, this movie looks to hip hop to a lot of different businesses as an art, a movement, how things are approaching differently, and the feeling of love and care that went into this. Like, Sonny Postmoff is considering, the loss of Dave or Plug 2. And of course, with this album, you got basically what you got for what you got for my album of theirs. Like you got checks that feel fun and vibrant, like Cool Summer Spring Fire, which again songs that bring, you know, those that feel fun and vibrant and not forced upon. Like it ain't like, see, this is why I like records like this and not Chance the Rapper, because this actually feels like I want to have fun. Chance the Rapper made me feel like I want like a force to have fun, which no. And of course, you got tracks like Yours and Run It Back, Yours Run It Back, and Quick Season for Mama and Sunny Storms, which I thought was fire. This is an amazing album that he's got put together. And again, I got to applaud like not only them, also Mass Appeal for making sure this album, you know. Is crafted well. And also, I want the intro was spoken by one called Esposito. Yeah, that guy. Announcing that the features of the album, like a roll call, like a class roll call, is like Nas here, the present, like, you know, Nas, Killer Mike, Yukimi. And then we hear what it said, Dave, and like, oh, it can get a little bit sad. Kind of like that. But yeah, this is a very amazing album. Like, I'm glad I got this soon as I can. But yeah. It's an amazing album. Before I get to number one, you got some honorable mentions, which I'll go through very quick. Fly Anakin, Forever Dream. AKA, the album that has that one song, The Times, I played a That's my number one song I played a lot on the YouTube Music, which is a good song. So yeah, Mike Showbiz, Mac Miller Ludorism, Bodhi James Murder During Drug Traffic, and Melonia on the Floor, Billy Woods Gollywog, Larry June 2 Chainz and the Alchemist Life is Beautiful. Slick Rick, Victory. DJ Haram, Beside Myself. Bane the Butcher, Summertime Butch 2. West Side Gun, Hills Have Eyes 2. I'm gonna just put one there. Like, fuck it. I like the one. But, and also fuck the WWE. I'll say collab with you, bitch. I'll shoot you in the owl.
Ugh.
Kitchenada, Ain't No Damn Way. And Nourished by Time, The Passionate Ones. And now, my number one album. Now, I know you're thinking, what could be number one album? What was your whole theme of this list? We've been saying a lot this list. And considering mostly out, because of hip hop. I wonder, what could be the number one record? What could be the one record that you've been saying a lot? What could be the one record that you know that you love? What could be the... Okay, I'll stop talking. Let's just say... Well, I got one to say. This may or may not be culturally inappropriate. Yeah. Clips, Let God Sort Them Out. Again, this was hard to say between De La Soul and this, because when De La Soul catches the spirit of hip hop in a way that's fun and vibrant yet bittersweet, Clips kept the spirit that is competitive and brutal in a way that's some heartstrings. Like you got the album that has tracks like Chase Whips and POV that hit hard in the jugular, going after some predictable and justifiable targets. Something like the Burst of Sing, where they talk about their parents passing away, figure how. And pushes first how he's not gonna see his kid, but his kid may remember his mom as he grows up. And then Miles, how they disagree with each other, and then finally get busted rap again, which even tracks like So Far Ahead and The Gears of God, how they escape the harsh reality of dope by their peers, which they ain't that lucky. Now, of course, I'm saying this. So it may be just a basic cult rap record, but it's not. Also, shots are going at shots thrown at hip hop couch chase. There's some rappers that got way disloyal and how they used to be dope boys and rappers used to like people think this is old man rap. And you know what? Fine. I accept this old man rap. You may call it rap, but you know, at least it's good shit. What the fuck y'all talking about? But what are y'all bringing to the table? You're complaining. You bring somebody, and they're like, what do you bring? You bring nothing. You bring shit. These guys brought it all. These two, Pusha T and Malice, who may remind you, or close to 50, or I think Malice is 50. I don't know. 50. They brought more rapping in this fucking album than half the fucking SoundCloud rappers did in the last 5 years. And of course, Features did one on the side too, but the course, Features from, you know, Tyler on POV. And of course, Kids Got Chains and Whips, aka the reason why Def Jam, is what they said, yeah, fuck you, Def Jam, going to Rock Nation. Because they don't want to sit in reverse. And yeah, for all the production, yes. It may be the Neptunes, but damn, it just sounds so good. Like, okay, like, but, and I think, like, of course, I'm from, you know, them performing that song at the Vatican, and now the song is nominated for best rap album, and okay, they're from the Vatican, and now look at them, nominated for both rap album and your album of the year. And this is a year that's like, they nominated, and so is Kendrick. And Tyler, I do want Tyler to win best alternative album. The alternative album should be just because I'm racist. But again, this is a year of like, don't fuck this up, Grammys. And I'm telling you right now, don't fuck this up. I know you're thinking, but we did it with Beyonce. I know. Here's the thing. That's a country record. No matter how y'all look at it, it's a country record it's a Beyonce record with country and a whole lot of other things to it, but I'm talking about hip hop. Y'all don't like, let's be honest, most of the people don't respect hip hop because most of the time y'all look at it as a trend or a fad or just something to meme about, which can be funny sometimes, but you know what I'm saying? It's also all from in itself, but yeah. It kind of shows that No, some of the rap albums that I put on here showcase that because rappers in the 40s, 50s doesn't mean they don't have any more. Like, those that they rap as hard, hell, better than your motherfuckers. Not only clips deliver on the bars, you want everything. And you know what? It made me realize that, yeah, we may get older, but doesn't mean we're getting sloppy. But just some of y'all, what we got. So, yes, clips. Let God sort them out. My album of the year. Okay, shit.
Yeah, you should probably drink some water or get some cough drops or something. I got plenty, but yeah. I can't teleport them through a Discord call. And so, now that all of that business is taken care of, time for me to round things out so we can all go, well, I assume to sleep after this. Or possibly some late night Chinese food. Maybe that's just me. Anyway, so, my list, for the first time in a while, is a bit longer than 20. So, technically, it's 25 spots, but 27 albums. You'll know as we hit certain points, but I do just want to say one thing here, a sort of statement from me as I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking a lot about, like, the music I've been listening to and some of the albums that stand out to me, and it kind of correlates with my least favorite thing that's been going on in the world in the past few years. You might be aware of it as well. I mean, Merriam-Webster literally chose it as their word of the year, and that is, of course, slop. I do not like all this machine-generated AI garbage that's been going around lately that people shove in your face and think they're entitled to have you be impressed by. Because you didn't do anything. You just, like, told your fucking machine to hallucinate a thing. It doesn't say anything about you other than you're a lazy bastard who has no vision or ambition or creativity or something to say to the world. And so I find myself diving more and more into music that's just, you know, not to say it's fully, like, badly produced or anything, but music that's just really purely expressing humanity. Like, the raw, like, really heavy-ass metal, pure dives into just the sorrows of the human experience, all that kind of stuff. Because that's what art is. It's the most human thing anyone can do. If you want Rob's philosophy on life, the universe, and everything, art fucking matters. Fuck anyone that says otherwise. But that's it for that little soapbox. So let's get into the list proper. So let's start at number 25. This is actually a debut album from a relatively new act. A self-titled release from a band called Sleep Paralysis. I found out about this from the blog Toilet of Hell, one of the best metal blogs out there. This project comes from Stephen Knapp from a black metal act called Cerulean. And Sleep Paralysis kind of falls into, I don't know if we have a proper word for this, but kind of like anxiety metal. Like, think bands like Daughters, Lingua Ignota, Chatpile. You know, artists whose music is just meant to, like, get under your skin and, like, evoke nightmares for eternity. I mean, the band is literally named Sleep Paralysis. And the music goes a long way towards conveying that feeling. It's like, imagine if Imperial Triumphant was somehow even fucking weirder. It's that exact same kind of chaotic, like, angular discordance, except now you get all kinds of weirder influences like, you know, drone or vaporwave. Hell, there's even, like, some really cool 8-bit chiptune stuff mixed into the insanity. And not, like, the super sugary sweet, like, you know, old Automonoguchi style. More like, this is just straight up how a composer would write a score in the 8-bit days. Happening in the middle of all this, like, crazy, insane sleep paralysis metal. And the lyrics are, of course, very fittingly about being stuck in that kind of nightmare headspace. Pretty good stuff. Maybe kind of a hard sell, but, you know, I like stuff like that. Number 24, we got another debut here. This coming from a Massachusetts band called Ancient Death, with their first release, well, their first studio album, Ego Disillusion. Speaking of writing certain trends, these guys are definitely one of those death metal bands in the vein of Blood Incantation. I'd say probably, like, more accessible than Blood Incantation, with a bit of that, like, old school sort of Florida death metal influence in there. So you got a really nice raw sounding production style. You have really excellent use of riffs and belling vocals. And while not the most, like, avant-garde use of, like, melodies in there, they still do write some really incredible, you know, melodic clean guitar sections that do a lot to counteract just the heaviness of all the riffs that are going around all over the place. This shows a lot of promise. I can't wait to see this band actually, like, you know, actually make it up there and maybe capture more of the metal world as a whole. Number 23, 10 Tricks Point Never, Tranquilizer. Best since Garden of Delete? Maybe. This is definitely one of the more, sort of, how do I put this? Solitude, kind of isolated feeling records he's put out in a while. It's definitely a lot of, like, sort of floating, just cold ambience, you know, based off all these sound samples and ROMs that he pulled from, like, you know, the Internet Archive and such. Once again, kind of reflecting this interesting, you know, fixation on technological nostalgia. Overall, kind of sounding like a soundtrack to, like, a really great science documentary that you sort of, like, half remember. Good stuff. Very good stuff indeed. It's certainly tranquil in some parts, and maybe a little bit uneasy in others. Number 22. Imperial Triumphant. Gold Star. You know, I'm starting to get the sense that maybe living in New York City might drive you a little bit batty sometimes. And so here we have another Imperial Triumphant record full of all kinds of really angular, jazzy as hell fucking extreme metal riffs just to kind of convey the idea that, hey, living in this, you know, fucking, like, cityscape will in fact drive you a little bit insane to the point where you put on masks and robes and play very avant-garde metal. There's definitely a bit more clarity in some of the musical passages at play here compared to previous albums, so I think that gives it a little bit more, you know, of an appeal in comparison to maybe albums that are a little bit harder to listen to. But make no mistake, this is still very, very odd and out there, but the kind of out there that I enjoy, so hell yeah. Number 21, Chatpile and Hayden Pettigo, In the Earth Again. So, you know, this Hayden Pettigo guy, he's a pretty good guitarist. Does a lot of really, you know, well-done, folk country guitar loops and instrumentals. And then you have Chatpile, who writes songs with titles like GrimaceSmokingWeed.jpg that are very, very loud and abrasive and unpleasant and capture just the harrowing sorrows of the wide awake nightmare that is, well, just being alive now. Putting them in the same room together, it could have come together a bit cleaner, but I do like the overall effect where, while you do have some heavier, you know, Chatpile-esque distorted, bellowing musical passages in there, there's this overall weariness. I think I said it before, but like, Pettigo's melodies kind of draw out some of the melancholy that exists underneath the surface of a lot of Chatpile's music, where, yes, it's about how, you know, reality just kind of grinds your psyche into the dust, but whereas Chatpile's music is normally a lot more manic about it, this one just kind of feels very exhausted and tired. Especially when you get to the, you know, just very beautiful, haunting album closer, A Tear for Lucas. A Tear for Lucas, indeed. Number 20, Perturbator, Age of Aquarius, The Synths, They Shall Never Die. Especially as long as we got, you know, excellent producers like Perturbator keeping the torch alive. Obviously, their sound has evolved a lot to kind of have more post-punk, sort of 80s new wave type stuff going on. But this one is kind of bringing a little bit more of like the 2010s, you know, dark wave peak of the genre into the mix for a record that's very, like, you know, darkly cinematic, with a lot of very fantastic synth arrangements, some really great vocal contributions from various guests on here, and all of that is just very, very wonderful to my ears. One of these days, I will learn how to play a synth. One day. Number 19, Moron Police, Pachinko. So, we have another album from Moron Police here, one that, much like their previous output, it's just fun. Like, it's very intricate, very bright on melodies with tons of wild, weird, fun surprises thrown your way. It's an album that evokes a sense of wonder and does something that, you know, feels very unique compared to a lot of other prog acts in the genre because it's just so much fun. Like I'm gonna be sad if Moron Police ever breaks up because there are few music acts in the world of any genre whose songs just put the biggest, dumbest smile on my face whenever I put them on, like Moron Police does. And I think that's very much worth doing. In fact, you know what? I'm going to make a very important declaration right now. ACAB does not include Moron Police. That is the highest honor I can give to a band with police in their name. Number 18, Benthos, From Nothing. So, you might be wondering, who the hell is Benthos? Well, I'll tell you who the fuck Benthos are. They are apparently a relatively recent progressive metal band from good old Italy. They made their debut back in 2021, I think, with an album called Two, and now we have their second album, Don't Ask Me How That Works. What, you think just because I'm a math guy, I understand the concept of counting numbers? Have you ever seen a chronologically confused video? But yeah, what does Benthos have to offer as far as the what they bring to the prog table? Quite a lot. They definitely have a very unique kind of mix of ideas and influences and kind of energies to it. You can hear some more like mathcore style frantic rhythmic passages in there. A little bit of Protest the Hero style guitar licks and vocals, some of that like BT BAM style heaviness, and even some of the more ballady type Dream Theater stuff in there, all kind of coalescing together into this really wild, unique, frantic kind of package. just showing that they are not fucking around. These guys are definitely here to play when it comes to the Prague game, and I'm very glad I was, like, introduced to this. If anyone's ever looking for, like, good metal channels or, like, TikTokers to check out, this is a bit of a tangent, but I recommend Metal and Coffee. She has a lot of really great recommendations on her channel, and that's how I found out about Benthos, and I'm glad I did, because I could very much see these guys, you know, rising further and further to become, like, a new essential act in the progressive metal scene. Just lots of really wild, crazy ideas all around. Number 17, Pup. Who will look after the dogs? I mean, how could I not like an album where the second track on it is literally about having an awkward reconnection with an old fling at fucking Olive Garden? Like, that's just relatable shit right there. I mean, who hasn't done that? Anyway, so, coming down from the unraveling of Pup the Band Inc., this album doesn't quite have, like, that sort of super elaborate framing narrative. It takes things sort of back to basics, streamlines some of that, but it still preserves what you would like about the Pup sound. A lot of very raucous garage rock and punk influences, with, of course, Stephen Babcock delivering a lot of very interesting, sarcastic, bitter vocal isms. My personal favorite line that I keep saying to myself every now and then being, it's funny how you come around when you're out of options, but I just don't give a shit about your problems. That's kind of the attitude on display here, but I think this album, more than anything, really drags kind of like how it really highlights the nuance of how Babcock kind of presents this attitude as a sort of defense mechanism from how much life sucks. Like, how do I put this? If Jax from Amazing Digital Circus had a favorite band, it would be Pup. You can probably deduce all that, what all that means later. Number 16. Billy Woods. Gollywog. Okay, so I don't know what kind of, like, weird universal cosmic energy is going on that makes Billy Woods have, like, consistently great output that is always, like, year-end worthy, but I guess he made a good deal, because, you know, Gollywog is another excellent album from the man. Of course, it delivers his own, like, you know, very deep voice, kind of unique flow, with plenty of excellent bars that kind of vent on his day-to-day life, his views on the state of the world, and just kind of general abstract stuff, while the production, of course, delivers plenty of, you know, really weird, interesting, and, like, dark but compelling soundscapes. And, you know, the weird thing about it is, now that I'm thinking about it, there's an Alchemist-like production feature on this record that sounds really great, which is weird because Armin Hammer did an album with the Alchemist where it kind of sounded like he specifically was sort of phoning it in. Hence my comment about, like, Billy Woods must just have, like, really good luck, or, like, the cosmic energy is flowing really well his way. But, yeah, once again, Billy Woods, really good shit. Number 15, Conjurer, Unself. I already spoke about this relatively recently. I think it was, like, the October roundup, but this being the band's third album, once again, they highlight how they have a really great approach to this kind of, like, sludgy, dingy sort of post-metal style, still keeping a lot of, like, the irregular rhythms and just really, you know, filthy guitar tones and loud booming drums, but having this record written in a way that brings a lot more emotional nuance to the table. You definitely get way more of, like, the sort of sorrowful side of their sound, just, like, that really deep melancholy that really gives this sort of style more nuance beyond just, oh, it sounds really dark and ominous. So, yeah, very, very strong streak so far. Let's hope they keep it going for, like, I don't know, maybe, like, 5 years from now when they put out their fourth record. Man, there are some long breaks there. Anyway, number 14, Tyler, the Creator, Don't Tap the Glass. I mean, the man said it himself at the beginning of the record, none of that deep shit. Just find the loudest speakers, put this album in, and then proceed to throw it back. That's all you really need to know. That's the vibe here, man. Just throw it on, go fucking nuts. And we've been over this. Do not tap the glass. Put it right there in the name. It's a simple set of instructions. Do you have any idea how expensive glass is these days? Especially with the fucking economy being what it is. Jesus. Number 13. Idle Heirs. Life is Violence. So this is another one of the really strong debut albums on this list. Specifically, this is a project that comes courtesy of Sean Ingram, vocalist of the metalcore band Coalesce. I know he was teaming up with the producer. I forgot to take a note of who that producer was, but the point is, this particular record, the best way I could describe it is that it kind of has the same sort of like post-metal vibe as like The Ocean, where it's a lot of very slow, steady grooves mixing kind of like these melancholic clean passages with these like really massive, slow chugging walls of guitar sound. And it all comes together really great in the kind of very similar terms to, again, how The Ocean does it. But I will say, while The Ocean's lyrical focus often tends to have more of this like grand scale sort of drama to it, I think what really makes this album excel is that the lyrical tone definitely feels way more, you know, introspective, you know, as far as where like Sean Ingram is in his life right now. So that gives it this really like, you know, deep sense of melancholy and sorrow that makes it feel all its own amidst all the really fantastic post-metal at play here. Now, number 12. Clips. Let God Sort 'Em Out. You know, it occurs to me that there's like two albums on this list that I could very comfortably describe as hot, what's the word here? Iconic motherfuckers coming out of retirement to be like, alright, let me show you fucking kids how it's done. I mean, it's like Fantano said, no skips, not a single one. Clips from the jump going straight from, you know, the depressing, melancholic sorrow of The Birds Don't Sing to some of the most immaculate, you know, hard-hitting bars and coke raps, slinging all sorts of malice at everything, from, you know, fucking trendy-ass content creator rapper types, to just anybody that's ever crossed them or so much as sneezed wrong in Pusha T's direction. And of course, once again, I have to say that Pharrell really is like one of the MVPs on this record. Once again, I've had to swallow all my words, Mr. Williams. I was not familiar with your game. So, yeah, just fucking hard as nails record. And, you know, I'm thinking, forget the cheap, you know, takeout Chinese. I might get some penne alla vodka after this. Number 11. This is actually one of the two spots that I have dedicated to two albums, given that they come from, you know, the same artist, technically speaking. So, my number 11 records are Street Sex with Dry Drunk and Full Color Eclipse under the name Street Sex. You know, for sex, like, faction and sex, like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Laugh! But yeah, it has been a while since we've heard from Street Sex. The reasons are understandable. Like, the main vocalist was going through a lot of really personal stuff at the time, but I'm glad they've been able to make it through the other side, because these albums, holy shit. Okay, so the record Dry Drunk still is kind of like a very harrowing listen. Just a lot of really blaring, aggressive, haunting, industrial, you know, metal just blasting in your face, conveying this fucking story of a seemingly normal guy who just kind of goes on this big psychological downfall that leads to him fucking going on like a cross-country murder spree and trying not to get caught. Seriously, that kind of lyrical downward spiral is oddly fascinating. Like an even darker version of the movie Falling Down, if I had to put an image to it. And then we have Full Color Eclipse, which is pretty much the exact opposite. Like, yes, it draws from a lot of, you know, very electronic, synthetic sound palettes, but doing so in a way that's more of this, like, haughty, like, gothic 80s post-punk sort of record. The Duality of Man. And they're both really damn good records, so, fingers crossed it doesn't take as long to hear any more from either Street Sex or Street... Street Fucking, that's what we're calling it. And now before we get into the top 10 proper, here's a whole bunch of honorable mentions. Let's see, we have Sumac and War Mother with The Film. Interesting combination of talents at play here, you know, post-Sludge Metal and War Mother's Cryptic Bars. Skrillex with Fuck You Skrillex, You Think You're Andy Warhol, But You're Not. Call the Fire Department, because we just nuked the building. We got a couple of EPs here, Full of Hell with Broken Sword, Rotten Shield, which as it turns out would be the last material they would record with Spencer Hazard before he left the band just a couple weeks ago. That's unfortunate. MS Paint with No Separation, you know, laying a pretty good foundation for what I hope will be a pretty good second album, which I'm sure will come eventually. Now for more proper albums. Baby Metal, Metal Fourth. I liked it better than the previous album. Still not fond of the Slaughter to Prevail feature. Fleshwater, 2000 In Search of the Endless Sky. Moody as fuck in the best possible 90s definition. Lorna Shore, I Feel the Ever Black Festering Within Me. Yeah, I still like Lorna Shore. Fight me in a Denny's parking lot about it. Wednesday Bleeds. After getting on, you know, the Wednesday train, after Rat Saw God climbed up the album charts, well, the year-end album list for, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, this new record, pretty good. Pretty cool mix of a downbeat garage rock, grunge, and even some country twang in there. Here's an interesting one that I think a lot of people might have missed. Die Close, the full-length debut of a band called Blood Vulture, which, A, delivers some honestly pretty good, you know, melodic sort of sludge and doom, and B, is actually a band fronted by none other than Jordan Olds, a.k.a. Gorsenio Hall of 2 Minutes to Late Night. He's a pretty good musician, not gonna lie. Danny Brown, Stardust. Yeah, Danny Brown on hyperpop shit. A lot of fun. Vacuous, In His Blood. Some really great, you know, underground, like, just very, like, cavernous kind of death metal. Rico Nasty's Lethal. This is a pretty fun experiment. I think it could have gone a bit farther with some of the pop punk and, you know, hardcore stuff, but it's always fun to hear Rico get on our hard, you know, hard as nails shit. All the Boldy James albums I heard. Dude, I lost track of which is which. Just all the Boldy James albums I heard. Baths with the album Gut. Really interesting mix of lush electronics and cool indie rock stuff. Also very gay. Not kidding when I say this is the gayest album I heard all year. Complimentary. By the way, y'all know this is the same person who composed the music for Bee and Puppy Cat on Netflix? Huh. Blind Equation, A Funeral in Purgatory. An album and band that once again proved that I Set My Friends on Fire were really ahead of their time. Complimentary, of course. Nourished by Time, The Passionate Ones. Idiot in the Park is still a bop. Backwash, Only Dust Remains. Probably one of their more relatively positive albums, but honestly still a very compelling listen overall. Bruiser Wolf with Potluck and Made by Dope. Jid with God Does Like Ugly. Clipping with Dead Channel Sky. Nina Jirachi, I Love My Computer. So this is what it would sound like if Porter Robinson produced for Brat. That sentence made sense to me at the time. There's Osmium self-titled, you know, that dark noise thing fronted by composer Hildur Guðnadóttir. It's very, very, if you're into Silent Hill music, this album needs to be in your rotation. And, of course, we have all the soundtracks and stuff. So, obviously, the three Lazarus soundtracks, Sinners, K-Pop Demon Hunters, Chainsaw Man the Movie, the Has-Been Hotel Season 2 soundtrack, which I'll say, the weak songs are weaker than Season 1, but the best songs are better than the best songs from Season 1. And, of course, I gotta throw in Deltarune Chapters 3 and 4, Toby Fox, You Magnificent Bastard. And now, for the top 10. Number 10, Callous Dowboys, I Don't Want to See You in Heaven. I want to propose a bit of a theory, an observation that hit me recently. We're in a really interesting spot for metalcore, mathcore, all these kind of like core subgenres that used to be looked down on really like derogatorily because of, you know, the saturation of the Warped Tour days. But something I've noticed about core music in, you know, the 2020s is that the bad stuff has definitely gotten a lot worse, but the good stuff has gotten so much better. Callous Dowboys being a prime example. They have some of the wildest approaches to mathcore songwriting in a while. They'll throw in fucking everything from, like, you know, electronic to more pop punk inspired melodies to post hardcore, fucking flamenco shit. This is just everything. Like, so many frantic rhythms, so many weird music ideas, so many, like, interesting vocal performances and lyrical concepts at play. It's just all, like, just throwing it all at once. They're not content to fucking jog in place, and God bless them for it. Number 9. Open Mic Eagle, Neighborhood Gods Unlimited. Definitely the most I've liked an Open Mic Eagle record in a while, mostly because it's the most I feel like I've understood an Open Mic Eagle record in a while. Kind of framing itself through the lens of, you know, sitting in a room, browsing through, like, a television station late at night, no doubt drawing from his experiences with Comedy Central, and let's be real, there's probably some influence taken from The Mouse and the Mask here, which I'm not complaining. This record definitely sees him, you know, not just getting up in his own headspace with, you know, obviously he must feel some certain way about how he was treated by Comedy Central, but, of course, like, how he puts a lot of himself into, like, technology and stuff, like that song where he drops the phone on the ground, and, you know, not afraid to even be a little bit silly every now and then. Like, I still think my coworker Clark Kent's Secret Black Box is, like, an all-time Open Mic Eagle classic for how, like, intentionally silly it kind of is. Like, dude, why are we all putting up with this fucking bullshit? We all know Clark Kent is Superman, what the fuck? But, yeah, good stuff. Number 8. The Armed. The future is here and everything needs to be destroyed. Yes, it certainly does. So talk about the comeback of the year, because I'm so indifferent to Perfect Stranger. See, that's how indifferent it was to the last Armed record. I can't even remember the name. But they finally picked back up a sense of urgency, delivering just another collection of really blaring, aggressive, like, you know, hardcore, experimental punk and noise, very loud, jarring saxophone passages, and lyrics that actually seem fit to take aim at everything from the way those in power kind of demoralize everyone beneath them, to even more abstract poetic stuff like I Steal What I Want. Just absolutely incredible on all fronts. Please don't drop the ball on the next record. Please don't let this be a fluke. Number 7. The Acacia Strain. You Are Safe From God Here. I feel like the fact that an Acacia Strain record made it into the top 10 should probably tell you how I feel about this year as a whole. Because, yeah, if I spend this much time, you know, singing the praises of a record that's just, you know, very aggressive deathcore misanthropy from the leading purveyors of it, then, yeah, everything's kind of fucked. But we got a really great record here that's mainly a lot of very punchy, aggressive deathcore bangers, and one lengthier, slower dirge at the end that really captures, once again, just the eternal frustration of having to live through this wide-awake bitch of an earth. I do not like it here, but I do like this album, very much. Number 6. Whitechapel, Hymns in Dissonance. This is the other record that I would put in the same vein of clips as, okay, here's a group of guys that are definitely iconic as far as their genre, coming out of this past couple records that are more of like this vaguely radio rock metal sort of territory, and being like, alright, what's the deathcore scene like? Like, oh god, 1056 and Paleface Swiss? Alright, let's show these fucking kids how it's done. And it is an incredible return to the well. These guys have absolutely not skipped a step. They were 100% saving and reserving their power levels for an album like this. And god damn, am I happy that it exists. Number 5. This is the other slot that's dedicated to two albums at once from the same artist. But there isn't like a weird naming scheme at play, so I don't have to do a lot of weird joking around. These albums are Ethel Cain with Perverts and Willoughby Tucker, I'll Always Love You. Now, when I went on the spiel earlier about like art reflecting the ugliest and most unpleasant parts of humanity, and how the music I tend to gravitate towards tends to do a lot of experimental stuff and say a lot of uncomfortable things about the human condition, these records are kind of what I had on the mind given the backstory of how they came into existence. Perverts being a 90-minute dark ambient EP that's a lot of non-melodic buzzing with plenty of odd droning synths and these very like super soft-spoken vocal passages that are all very much like kind of the sensation of listening in on someone having a nervous breakdown while pleasuring themselves. An album that feels very much designed as a response to people who were apparently making like all kinds of memes and shit posts about Preacher's Daughter, which was a very serious work of art in and of itself, and Ethel Cain saying, "I do not want you listening to my music. Here is one of the most challenging things I could put out to scare people like you away. Because you never cared about art in the first place." And I respect that kind of thing. But then, of course, we have the actual proper next Ethel Cain record, which as far as like the continuity of her albums kind of serves as a prequel to Preacher's Daughter, seeing the Ethel Cain character in kind of like her high school days, struggling with a lot of things from, you know, some religious trauma, but also mainly the complicated emotional feelings she has regarding her love interest, Willoughby Tucker. And it's just a really compelling, like, the music itself is also great. It's kind of an extension of what Perverts was doing, sort of taking, you know, sort of that, you know, lengthy droning musical framework and applying the folksy Americana of some of her previous releases to it to create a really emotionally intense record that forces you to kind of sit in your feelings and process, like, kind of just the themes of the record, just the kind of emotional pain and insecurity that tends to come with trying to emotionally open yourself up to other people, because it's not pleasant. That kind of stuff hurts you in more ways than one. Anyone who's ever been in a relationship can tell you that. So, yeah. Ethel Cain, I may have only started listening to you this year, but you 100% have my respects as an artist. Number 4. Pupil Slicer. Fleshwork. So, once again, in terms of what I'm saying about, like, dash, like, core music getting a lot better and more interesting in the 2020s, Pupil Slicer once again comes in with just some really, really great mathcore excellence at play here. There definitely still is like this frantic energy to a lot of the songs, but overall it does kind of tend to slow things down a bit more to a lot of these really like excellent grooves. The production sounds amazing. The drums really like, you know, belt out into the mix. The guitarists have a lot of like meat on their bones. And, of course, the vocals have, like, that really great mix of just really, like, front-loaded, like, cutting savagery, but also, like, weird, eerie, ethereal, you know, vocal melodies going on in the background. All leading into this, like, really great collection of songs about all kinds of stuff. Again, the Wide Awake Nightmares of Reality are a recurring theme here. But I do also want to point out that apparently, and I missed this in the press releases until the album came out, the title track of this album is, according to the band, very heavily influenced by Chainsaw Man. And when you look at the lyrics, I can 100% tell you what it's about. And what I have to say to that is, why did you have to remind me of that plot point of all things in a song? Volume 9, if you know, you know. Yeah. But still, incredible album. Also, apparently there are songs on this record that are about Near and mouthwashing. Number 3. Between the Buried and Me, The Blue Nowhere. Hello, we're back, department. I would like to file a claim. Yeah, BT Bam's been in a weird spot. Not that I really think they've had bad albums in the interim, but it kind of feels like I don't go back to them as much. This one, on the other hand, really felt like there was a like new spark under their ass, probably because of, again, having to proceed as a four-piece, so they had to work like a lot harder to prove that they still got it. But that combined with the fact that this is coming off of the tour where they were playing Parallax 2 Future Sequence in its entirety, which, as a reminder from my perspective, is the best BT BAM album. And this record evokes a lot of that same energy. You have a lot of great, you know, metalcore, really incredible rhythms and guitar melodies, really interesting use of electronics and synths, all rolling together into one of the band's more over-the-top, very, like, theatrical kind of releases. So, BT BAM is back. Let's hope they can at least keep a consistent streak going. And may they long avoid having to do a weird double split thing in 1 year. Autobot was weird. Number two. Haunting Barna. Soft Spot. You might be asking yourself, what the hell's a Haunting Barna? Well, I'm glad you asked, hypothetical person I made up to prove a point. So, this is actually something I picked up on from going through the Yellow Flannel videos on Fantano's channel. This is a Norwegian punk band that's been around since like 2011. The name translates to the Honey Children, and this is their seventh album overall, and I was really taken aback, like, going through their discography. They have some solid records, but this is like leagues far and beyond everything else they've ever done so far, because like this one hits. Like, as soon as you get to the second track, it fucking punches you in the jaw with like some of the thickest bass lines you've heard on like any record this year, leading into, you know, this really rapid rolling set of drums, you know, alternating between tom snare and even some cowbell. The vocals, of course, they're sung in like a Norwegian dialect, I forget the exact name, are very like, sounding like they're being shouted at you from like a megaphone, and everything just kind of like swirls together, especially once the actual guitars kick in, and the song becomes this really like just relentless sonic assault of hardcore energy, and everything else just kind of like continues out from there, and it demonstrates a lot of really cool songwriting flexibility. There's a great mix of like fast-paced D-beats, but also some really strong bouncy grooves. You get, like, very full-force sort of songs, but also, like, some more, like, tuneful sort of riffs, and honestly, some pretty catchy, like, vocal passages. Like I said, I may not fully understand the words being said, but there's some really great vocal melodies and rhythms on display here, and it is just, it's honestly kind of insane to me that it feels like no one is talking about this. Like, I know I said Fantano is the reason I heard of this record, but I was doing a search now that a lot of, like, the year-end album lists are out, and not a one seems to be mentioning this particular record, which is insane, because, again, it's got a really great energy to it. It is simultaneously really, really heavy while also being really catchy. Hell, at times it kind of reminds me of, like, The Armed back when they first exploded. Like, there's a song or two here and there that almost has like kind of that exact same mix of like really just blasting D beats and yet oddly serene melodies. This feels like exactly the kind of like avant-garde sort of hardcore stuff that the blogs should be eating up, and no one's saying anything. It's fucking insane to me. Are y'all asleep at the wheel? Like, are you so busy gassing up Turnstile that actual excellence staring you in the face from Norway is getting ignored here? No, I am not letting that go. But yeah, I'm going to say it. Haunting Barna's Soft Spot is the most underrated record of the year, bar none. If there's any album that I would prioritize here listening to first before any of the others, even though, you know I have a number one album, do not sleep on this record. You're gonna regret it, trust me. Alright, so here we are, number one. What could probably be the number one album on this soul list of mine? I don't know. These lists always take me a lot of like work to really like sort out, but I think usually a good metric of mine is, I tend to look at, like, my Apple Replay and see what, like, the most replayed songs or albums are. So, just for a little bit of fun, let's go through my top 20 most listened to songs of 2025, according to Apple. So, number 20, Emergence by Sleep Token. Number 19, Iris Out from Chainsaw Man. Number 18, Hole in the Sky by Black Sabbath, for band reasons. Number 17, Wildfire by MS Paint. Number 16, Black Rainbow by Spirit Box. Number 15, Fata Morgana by Spirit Box. Number 14, A Haven with Two Faces by Spirit Box. Number 13, Tsunami Sea by Spirit Box. Number 12, Change the Channel by Clipping. Number 11, It's TV Time by Toby Fox. Number 10, Hunting Soul from Dawn to Dawn. Number 9, Crystal Roses by Spirit Box. Number 8, Copycats by Danny Brown. Number 7, Gravity from the Hazbin Hotel soundtrack. Number 6, No Loss, No Love by Spirit Box. Number 5, Stop Playing With Me by Tyler, the Creator. Number 4, Keep Sweet by Spirit Box. Number 3, Soft Spine by Spirit Box. Number 2, Perfect Soul by Spirit Box. Number 1, I Steal What I Want by The Armed. The punchline of this entire section should be pretty obvious. My number one album is... Plot twist, it was actually the Deltarune soundtrack. Ha! Nah, I'm just kidding. It's obviously Spirit Box with Tsunami Sea. Again, it's the replay value. Can you tell? This is the other album on my list, or one of the other albums, that once again points to my theory that the metalcore music of the 2020s has been, like, fucking batting a thousand, or, like, the good stuff has been, like, leaping so far ahead of what we thought was possible when we were, like, you know, dumb high schoolers. It's crazy. And, of course, leave it to Courtney LaPlante and Mike Stringer and company to deliver a really phenomenal follow-up to their debut full-length to prove that this isn't just a lark. This isn't just, like, a trend. They have legitimate fucking chops and are here to stay. Again, the production is phenomenal. The riffs are fucking beefy and fat sounding, delivering some of the most satisfying chug action you'll hear on any record this year. The melodies are very lush and vibrant, both coming from the guitars and the synth work. And of course, the way Courtney LaPlante, if I may borrow a classic reference, the way her vocals go up like an angel and down like a wounded ox. We really need a sequel to Ragtime Dandies or something. And it's just nonstop, consistent excellence throughout the record. This is 100% one of those ones I can tell you, every time I put it on, it was start to finish. No skips. None at all. You're really going to skip Courtney LaPlante? How dare you, sir? So, again, not surprising anyone, Spirit Box, Tsunami Sea, 100% taking it all home. The number one album that made an otherwise terrible year a little bit more bearable. And so, brings us to the end of this session. If you're actually hearing this episode, as usual, it's probably going to be out by Christmas. So, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. May you gorge yourself on ham or pork or whatever your Christmas protein of choice is. If you had any, you know, albums that you thought were interesting or noteworthy, leave them down in, you know, whatever sort of commenting section might be here. Thank you for following us through this terrible, terrible year. I can only hope 2026 is slightly less terrible. I can only hope. It can't get worse, can it? So, once again, thank you for listening. I need another break. We'll see you again in 2026. And until then, peace out.
Okay, now about the Pistol Cane. Come here, you.
Oh, I didn't do anything wrong. You're looking at the Purple Rabbit over there.
He's next.
Whoa, don't look at me. I'm just sitting here trying to punch Gangle. Dude, that's...
Okay, and I get it twice. Don't hurt Gangle.
I was kidding. Kind of.